Okay, good morning, everyone. Welcome back. Yom Ha'atzmaut Sameach. And of course, we'll have to tie this in somehow to Yom Ha'atzmaut today. But we are up to the 18th chapter of Malachim Aleph. And we're in the middle of the Eliyahu stories, arguably the most famous stories in all of Tanakh. And today's chapter, today's perek, is out of the whole Eliyahu stories. This is probably the most famous story, one of the most famous stories, certainly, in all of Nach. It's a very famous story of Eliyahu at Har HaKarmel, where he challenges the Nevi'ei Baal to a showdown, throwdown. But let's take a step back. It's been a little while. I think our last class was before Pesach. So we'll just do a couple of minutes of review. So if you recall, we were introduced to Eliyahu in Perek Yud Zayin. And Eliyahu, seemingly out of the blue, remember he was upset because Ahav was almost being rewarded for his inappropriate behavior. And Eliyahu felt that that was a challenge to God's system of divine judgment. And so Eliyahu comes and he basically says, remember it was a dispute, it was a machlokes, whether Eliyahu on his own decided to make a drought, there are sheets over there, whether Eliyahu on his own decided to make a drought, whether it was Hashem encouraged him to make a drought. But the whole Perek Yud Zayin was all about this really horrific drought that permeated throughout the country and was very, very disastrous. I mean, if you recall, we had the story of the Nachal Crete, of the wadis being dried up. You had the story of Eliyahu and his hostess and the child dying of starvation. And Eliyahu ultimately has to bring the child, resuscitate the child. So the whole, you know, preceding story to this is a story of drought. And if you recall, what we discussed last time was largely about Eliyahu's almost stubbornness in his defense of Hashem versus his ability to see the human side of suffering that was taking place as a result of him trying to make a statement. Right? We have a word for this in English. It's called, you cut your nose to spite your face. So that's a lot of what was happening in chapter 17. Was Eliyahu was so stubborn in his defense, he was so defiant, he was so zealous, kano kaniti, remember he was so zealous in his defense of Hashem that human beings were suffering as a result. Okay? Now, Eliyahu, don't forget, was on the run because Ahab wanted to catch him. And so that is the whole backdrop to this week's chapter. This week's chapter is somewhat long, but it's also somewhat famous. So what I want to do is I'm going to run through the perek relatively quickly just to give us a sense and a flavor for the story. And then I obviously want to take a step back, as we always do, and develop some themes and try to understand in a little bit more depth exactly what is going on in this story. So if you turn, you're on page number one of your source packets, and I am on the beginning of Perek Yirched. Vayhi yamim rabim, udvar Adonai haya el Eliyahu b'shana shlishit lemor, lech hera'e el Ahav et na matar al pnei adama. So the Navi already tells us something very interesting here. What already interesting do we know? Vayhi yamim rabim. What does that mean? Many days. Now, it doesn't need to tell us many days, right? It could have left that out. Oftentimes, the Tanakh does not give us the chronological order or the time lapse that exists between one pasuk and the other. What's the significance of yamim rabim? Right, don't forget, what are we in the midst of? We're in the midst of a drought. Yamim rabim means that this, I don't even know if that's quantitative or qualitative, but yamim rabim certainly means that this drought has been going on a long time, right? You and I both know if you're in a painful situation, so yamim rabim can feel like forever. A short time can feel like a very long time, okay? So it's been a long time, and Hashem now tells Eliyahu to go and to meet Ahab because he's going to give rain. He's going to bring back rain. And if I stopped here, what would you think the entire chapter is about? His meeting with Ahav. You think Ahav is going to be the central character in the entire story. And we'll see that's not exactly what happens. So again, it reemphasizes that the famine is very strong. So Eliyahu is on his way to meet Ahav, and who comes out to meet him instead of Ahav? Ahav sends Ovadyahu. What are we told about Ovadiah? We're told a few things. Number one is Asher al Habayit, which means that he was in charge of the house. And number two is we're told that he was a Yarei es Hashemot, that he feared God. Okay, that's interesting. That's an interesting way to introduce someone, especially a sidekick to Ahav. Ahav was not a particularly good king, if you recall, many weeks ago, right? So it's strange that Ahav is now going to Ovadiah and that the Nach decides to introduce Ovadiah in very encouraging terms. Pasuk Dalet 4, Vayhi be'achris Izevel eis neviyei Adonai vayikach Ovadiah. So Izevel, so she decides that she's going to kill off all of the prophets of Hashem. So Ovadiah takes mea nevi'im vayachbi'im chamishim ish b'mara v'chilkaleim lechem v'mayim. So he takes 100 of the prophets, and to great danger, great personal danger, he hides 50 in two different caves, and he feeds them, and he nourishes them. Now that's significant, A, because it's a great personal danger to Ovadiahu. He doesn't have to do that. If Ahav finds out, what's Ahav going to do to him, or Izevel going to do to him? He's going to have him killed. Even worse, why does he split them into two caves? Couldn't find a cave big enough for one. For safety, that way if one of them is found, the other isn't. And number right, what Yaakov does at the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, very good. Right, and what else does he do? He feeds them. Feeding them is not easy. Right, think about stories that we hear from the Holocaust. Person gets one piece of bread and they decide to share it with someone else. Right, so Ovadiah has food. I would imagine that he was very hungry, that his family was very hungry, that other people wanted access to that food, and he's choosing to save it and to serve it to these 100 Nevi'ei Hashem. Okay, so Ovadiah, we now get the sense, he's a good guy. He didn't just tell us he's a good guy, but it shows us that he's a good guy. Pasuk Hei, Vayomer Achav el Ovadiah, Leich Ba'aretz, El Kol Ma'inei Amayim, Ve'el Kol Anechalim, Ulai Nimsa Chatzir, Unechaye Sus, Ba'fered, Ve'lo Nachris Mibehima. Vayichaku Lehem Es Ha'aretz, Lavar ba Achav halach b'derech echad levado, v'Ovadiah halach b'derech echad levado, v'hi Ovadiah b'derech v'hinei Eliyahu likraso. So Ovadiah is on his way, and he meets up with Eliyahu. V'yakirehu, so he recognizes him. V'yipol al panav, v'yomer hatazeh Adoni Eliyahu. Ovadiah meets him. Eliyahu is famous at this point. Don't forget, he's the number one wanted man. He's top on the FBI's most wanted list. So Ovadiah, bam, lucky day. Guess who he meets in the airport? He meets Eliyahu and he says, are you? He bows down. He says, are you Eliyahu? And again, we know that Ovadiah is a Yirei Hashem. He's God-fearing. So here he sees the prophet of Hashem. He's beyond himself. He can't control himself. So he says, are you Eliyahu? Vayomer lo ani? He says, yes, I am. Lech emor ladonecha, hine Eliyahu. He says, go tell Ahav, here I am. I'm ready to be found. Vayomer me chatasi ki ata nosena savdecha biyarech kav lamiseni. So Ovadiah, well, how would you respond? You meet Eliyahu in the airport, number one most wanted person, and he says, here I am, come get me. And how does Adonyahu respond? He says, what, are you trying to get me killed? Right? Think about this. Someone steals state secrets, okay? And they're the number one most wanted person in the country. And you bump into them at Starbucks. And they say, go tell the FBI that I'm right here. So, and I'm going to tell you some of the state secrets along the way. So what are you afraid of? You're afraid that you're going to call the FBI, they're going to come back, this guy's going to be gone, and the FBI is going to say, what'd you waste our time for? So that's what Ovadiah was afraid of here. He's afraid that he's going to go. Don't forget, they didn't have fax machines, telephones. So he was going to run and get Ahav, bring Ahav back. And what's Eliyahu going to do? Eliyahu's going to be gone. Dust in the wind. So he says, you're going to get me killed. Chai Adonai Elohecha im yesh goy umamlacha asher lo shalach Adoni sham levakeshcha v'amru ayin v'yishbiya samamlacha v'esa goy ki lo yimzeka. He says, there's been a tremendous search going on for you. There isn't a corner of this land that they haven't sent people to try to find you. Ve'ata, ata omer lechem or ladonecha hine Eliyahu, and you just expect me to waltz into the king's palace and say, oh, by the way, Eliyahu is on the street corner. Ve'aya ani eleich meitach, I'm going to leave you. Ve'ruach adonai yisa'echa al asher lo eda, you're going to be, you know, caught up, you're going to disappear like the wind. Uvasi la'gi la'achav, v'lo yimtza'echa v'argani, and I'm going to go tell Achav, he's going to come and you're going to be gone, he's going to kill me. I've always been God-fearing. This is how you punish me? I don't need this headache. My life was good 10 minutes ago. You fell into my lap. What do I need this problem for? So what does Eliyahu say? Hello, hu gad ladoni es asher asisi barog Izevel. He says, maybe you haven't heard what Izevel's done to all the Nevi'i Hashem. And what I've done, v'achbi min Nevi'i Hashem, mea ish, Chamishim, chamishim ish, b'marav ve'achav kalem, lechem amai. Maybe you didn't hear the great things that I've been doing, right? You didn't read the New York Post this morning. You don't know about everything. So why are you doing this to me? Ve'ata ato mer lechem or ladonecha hinei Eliyahu v'argani. Now you're telling me to go tell Achav. Ve'yomer Eliyahu chai Adonai tzva'od asher amadati lefanav ki ayom ere elav. Eliyahu says you have nothing to worry about. The same way that I'm here right now, I'll be here when Achav comes. Vayelech Ovadyahu likras Achav vayaged lo, so Ovadyahu now believes Eliyahu. He goes to greet Achav. Vayelech Achav likras Eliyahu. And Achav comes to meet Eliyahu. Vayehi kiros Achav es Eliyahu vayomer Achav elav hata ze ocher Yisrael. Are you the ocher Yisrael? What does the word ocher mean? Right, Mitzudasion says, "Mashchitu mechabel." It's more than a troubler. It's pardon my language in a shul, but you're the idiot that's caused all these problems. Don't forget who caused the drought. Who's making all this ruckus in the land? It's Eliyahu. Achav comes to him and says, "You're the fool that's been killing off thousands of people because of your defiant defense of Hashem." Vayomer lo acharti es Yisrael. Eliyahu says, I didn't do anything wrong. Ki mata uveis avicha. You're the one. You're the problem. You're deviating from the path of Hashem. That's what's caused this problem. Be'az v'chem es mitzvah sadonai v'telech acharai ba'alim. Don't blame it on me. Don't use me as your scapegoat. You're the problem. So now here we come to the throwdown. Pasuk Yotes. Ve'ata shalach. So let's pause here for a second. No, let's actually go on. V'atash lach kvot elayas kol Yisrael el hara Carmel. Go gather everyone. V'es nivyei abal arba meos v'chamishim u'nivyei asherah arba meos ochlei shulchan Izevel. I want the whole world there. The New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Post, the Press. I want everyone there. I want all of the Jews and I want all of the nivyei baal, the false prophets. Word goes out. Everyone come to Har HaKarmel. Where's Har HaKarmel? Nowadays, if you have to find it on a map, it's right near Haifa. Okay? Vayigash Eliyahu el kol ha'am. Eliyahu comes to the people. Vayomer, and he says to them, Ad mataya temposchim al shtei hasifim, im Adonai Elohim lechu acharav, v'imaba lechu acharav, v'lo anu ha'am oto davar. Arguably the most important pasuk here, Eliyahu, don't forget, he's got everyone. So you picture thousands and thousands of people. Okay? And you have three groups of people. You have the Nevi'ei Baal, you have the Nevi'ei Asherah, so we'll just call them the idolaters. And then you have the Jews. And Eliyahu gets up and he ignores the prophets, the idolaters, who, by the way, have been hunting him for all these years. And he turns to the Jews and he says, Nu, ad matai atem poschim. Poseach here means to linger, to jump, to, right, what's a good translation? If you recall, the famous Kedusha Salevi on Pesach, it means to hover. Right? When are you going to hover? When are you going to have this schizophrenic personality? Either believe in Hashem or believe in idolatry. But you can't have your cake and eat it too. Right? And again, there's so much depth to that pasuk, especially for Jews living in a modern world who feel torn between a life of modernity and a life of tradition. Right? So that those words of ad mataya temposchim, when are you going to hover? When are you going to have that split personality that on the one hand you want to have, you know, secular culture, on the other hand you want to have religious culture? You can't have it both ways. You got to have your allegiances to one person. So what's it going to be? Is it going to be Hashem or is it going to be the Neve Baal? And the Jewish people are, they're silent. They sit there. They're speechless. They don't know how to respond to Eliyahu. This is a challenge to them. Okay? Vayomer Eliyahu el ha'am. So Eliyahu says to the nation, Ani notarti navi l'Adonai levadi. I am the last one. Unevi'e ha'bal, I am one, sorry. Unevi'e ha'bal arba me'o v'chamishim ish, and they're 450. Vayinu lanu shnayim parim, give us two cows. Vayivcharu lahem ha'par echad v'yinatchuhu. Vayesimu alaitzim ve'ish lo yasimu. Ve'ani esas ha'par echad v'natati alaitzim ve'ish lo asim. So we're going to have a throwdown. We're going to take two of the exact same situations. We're going to put a cow on wood with no fire. Ukratem b'shem Elohechem, ve'ani ekra b'shem Adonai, ve'aya Elohim asher yana b'esh hu Elohim v'yan kolam v'yomru tova davar. So he said, this is the throwdown. We're going to put them, there's no fire, we're each going to pray to our gods. Whichever one answers, that's the right god. I want to give you the advantage. Home field advantage. You can choose the animal and you can call out to your God. So again, Pasuk Chavav 26. They're crying, they're all morning long. There's no response whatsoever. Vayifaschu. That sounds very similar to us. Right? What's the root of that word? Pesach, right? Adat mataya tem poschim. So here you have vayifaschu. They're dancing. Al mizbeach asher asa. They're trying to wake up their God. Vayibatzaraim. So all of a sudden it's noontime. Vayatel bahem Eliyahu. So Eliyahu, what's vayatel? Right, v'la'ag, he starts making fun of them. V'yomer kerubikol gadol. Maybe you want to speak up a little bit. Ki Elohim hu as kisiach v'chol sig lo v'chiderech lo ulay ashen hu v'yikatz. Maybe he didn't hear you. Maybe he's taking his morning shluf, he slept in this morning. And if you speak a little louder, maybe your God will hear it. So again, v'yikerubikol gadol. So they speak even louder, vayis go to do, and they start cutting themselves, right? That's why we have that prohibition of losis go to do. That was a form of idolatry. Kimishpatam becharavot uvar machim achvachtam aleim. So they're pouring blood, they're screaming, they're dancing, right? You just get this very sense of this balagan almost. Vayikavor hatzaraim. So now we're already past midday. Vaisnavu ad la losa mincha, they come to mincha ve'in kadol, gokol ve'in onet ve'in kashem. You got nothing. Okay? Vayomer Eliyahu lechol ha'am, gishu elai. Eliyahu says, now it's my turn, come here, and the whole nation comes. Vayikshu kol ha'am elav, vayirape es mizbeach anai ha'arus. He heals, he fixes the mizbeach that was destroyed. A lot of symbolism there, we're not going to go into that. Vayikach Eliyahu shtei mesrei avanim. Kimispar shifte b'nei Yaakov. So he takes 12 stones. Asher ayat dvar anai elav lemor Yisrael yesh mecha. Again, symbolism to the 12, reminding the Jewish people of their everlasting connection of Knesset Yisrael with Hashem. Vayivnes avanim mizbeach b'shem anai. He builds a mizbeach. Vayas te'aleh. He makes a, what's a te'aleh? A trench. He puts the cow, everything's ready. And then what does he tell them to do? He says, drench the... I'm going to make this even better. You know, when you have like the magicians. But there's more. He says, pour water all over it. And sure enough, they fill up the trench. They fill up the entire Mizbeach. Pasuk Lamed Vav 36. Vayhi ba'alos ha-mincha. Parenthetically, this is why Chazal tell us, the Torah very famously says that Tfilas Mincha, if you want your prayers answered, so Mincha is the most auspicious of the davening. And we learn it out from this pasuk because Eliyahu is heard at Mincha time. Okay? So all of a sudden it's Mincha time. Vayigash Eliyahu Navi. Vayomer Adonai Elohe Yisrael, Yitzchak, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yisrael. Hayomi vada ki ata Elohim v'Yisrael. Ve'ani avadechad. Today they'll know for sure that you are God and I am your servant. Uvidvarecha asisa es kol advarim eila. And you'll vindicate me. Because they all think I'm the bad guy, that I caused the drought. But now they'll know that it was you who wanted this all along. Aneini Adonai aneini. Hashem, answer me. Ve'idu ha'am hazeh ki ata Adonai Elohim. Ve'ata sibota et libam acharonit. And they'll know that you're the God and that their hearts should be drawn after you. Vatipol esh Adonai. Vatochal es ha'ola ves ha'itzim ves ha'vanim ves ha'afar ves ha'mayim. Asher bata'ala l'cheika. Sure enough, fire comes down and consumes everything. Vayar kol ha'am. Everyone sees this. Vayiplua p'nehem. They fall on their faces. Vayomru Adonai hu Elohim. Adonai hu Elohim. We now realize that Hashem is God. Where do we know those words from? Conclusion of Yom Kippur. Very symbolic, right? That's the last thing we say. Hashem hu Elohim, right? Again, we start off Yom Kippur, a little bit of Ad Matai Atem Poschim, right? We're hovering. We want Hashem. We want a cake and eat it too. We end up, soul allegiances to Hashem. Okay? And then, so you're like on a high right now. This was the greatest moment. A miracle on par with the splitting of the sea. Okay, and then there's somewhat of an anticlimactic ending. Vayomer Eliyahu lahem tifshu es nevi'ei ha'baal ish al yimaleit mehem vayitpesum vayuridum Eliyahu al nachal kishon vayishchateim sham. So they slaughter all the 450 nevi'ei ha'baal. Vayomer Eliyahu la'achav. Now we turn back to Achav. Aleh chol u'shetei. Go up to the mountain. Eat and drink. Ki kol hamon ha'geshem. Because I hear the sounds of rain coming. Vayale Achav leachov lishtov Eliyahu ala el rosh ha'karmel. Vayighar arza, he prostrates himself down. Remember that word. Vayasam panav ben birkav, he puts his face in between his knees. Vayomer el naaro ale na abet derech yam, go up to the mountain, look over into the ocean. Vayal v'yabet vayomer ein me'uma, he says there's nothing there. Vayomer shuv sheva pamim, he says go back 7 times. Why 7 times? We'll have to see. Vayhi bashvi'it, the 7th time. Vayomer hinei av kitana, there's a small cloud. Kikaf ish, like the, what's a kaf? Like the hand of a person. Very small. Ola miyam, which is coming up from the water. Vayomer alei amor al achav esor vareid velo yatsarcha hageshem. Avim, all of a sudden out of that one small thing, clouds, veruach, and wind, and a tremendous rain, and Achav disappears. And Eliyahu chases after Achav. That is the end of our parak. What strikes you? Don't think about it too much. What struck you as I was reading, other than the air conditioning too hot in here, too cold in here? What struck you? What strikes you about the para? Think about with your literary mind. The drama. So of course the drama. Let's be a little bit more nuanced. Right? We say, what's this para about? It's the throwdown. If I go to a kid in the high school, learn Malachim, you say Malachim, parak yud ches. They would say, is it on the test? No, they would say, it's the throwdown between Eliyahu and the Nevi'ei Baal. Everyone knows that. What's the problem with that? Again, ask me questions. Yeah.
There's a lot of strange conversations. The conversation that Abraham has with Eliyahu is, if he's a believer in Hashem, why is he questioning going to the king? Why is he questioning?
Good. So, question number one should be, if the whole focus of the chapter is about the throwdown, there's a lot of noise, right? Remember I asked you at the beginning, I said, who's the focus here? You said it's probably Achav. Is Achav really the focus of this chapter? No, right? The whole first 19 psukim, first 18 psukim of the parak is basically all about this guy named Ovadiyahu, who we didn't really know anything about and seems completely unnecessary to the story. Totally unnecessary to the story. The last 8 psukim of the parak, go up, look, go down, go up. Everyone's going up. And they're looking over, and Achav's eating and drinking. It's like, what is going on here? How is that helpful? What does that teach me? So question number one is the white noise. That I think every one of us, and I'm going to focus the least amount on that, on the actual middle of the story, because they're really 3 story plots. The middle of the story is the most famous one. I'm more interested in why you need the outer edges of the parak. That's question number one. Question number two. Who's the parak for? Who's this whole throwdown for, the middle section of our parak? Who's the focus?
People.
The people, right? Now that's interesting because there are really 2 groups of people there. You have the Nevi'ei Baal, remember, that was on that side. And on the other side you have, remember, who does Eliyahu say to gather? Kol Yisrael. He says, I want everyone there. And if you paid attention, you'll notice there was one word at the beginning of the throwdown which came up over and over again. And that is the word Am. Right? Eliyahu comes, Vaigash Eliyahu es kol ha'am. He doesn't turn to Achav. He doesn't turn to the Nevi'ei Baal. Who's his sole focus on? It's for the people. V'lo anu ha'am oto. He turns to the people. He says, what's wrong with you? Don't you think he should have chastised the Nevi'ei Baal and said, how could you serve idolatry? The answer is that wasn't his focus. His focus is on the people. You have this where else? What other story? What other story do you have 2 groups of people and you're kind of left wondering, who's this really about? It's the story of
Moses.
Exactly, the Jews in Mitzrayim. When Hashem is doing all these miracles and you keep on hearing a phrase, Vayedu, that they'll know that I'm Hashem. Who's the they? That's the one of the key questions. Is it so that the Egyptians will know? Or is it so that the Jews will know? And obviously there are elements of both, but it's really so that we'll know. Hashem performs the miracles in Mitzrayim so that we know forever that Hashem is Hashem. That's what this parak is about. Now you have to start with that premise. This parak is not about Acha. This parak is not about the Nevi'ei Baal. They're the pawns on the chessboard. But the king and queen here, the central characters, are Hashem and the Jewish people. And the whole purpose of this throwdown is simply to get everyone to realize that it's time to start believing in Hashem. Okay? Is that distracting people? No? Okay. So that's number one. What's the central pasuk, if you recall? Remember I said that Ad Mataya Temposchim. How long are you going to hover? Right? The Jewish people feel torn. They have multiple allegiances. They have a schizophrenic personality. They lack a clear identity. Right? Are we Americans or are we Jews? Is our allegiance to the Nevi'ei Baal, to Achav, our king? Or is our allegiance to the other king, Hashem? And so they lack a clear identity. Let's go back to Ovadiyahu. What does the word Ovadiyahu mean? What does the name mean? Eved, which means a servant of Hashem. That's really interesting that Achav's chief of staff, that's like Hitler's chief of staff, would be called servant of Hashem. So that's very interesting. Okay, he's the servant. He's an Eved to Hashem. Okay, go to Pasuk Zayin for a second. Who's Achav's master? We're introduced to Achav, I'm sorry, to Ovadiyahu, that he's Ashir al-Abayit, that he's in charge of Achav's house. And then you come to Pesach Zayin. Vahi Ovadiyahu baderech, so Ovadiyahu is on the way. Vine Eliyahu likrato. So Eliyahu meets him, vayakireyu, he recognizes him. Vayipol al-panav, vayomer, and what does Obadiah say to Eliyahu? How does he refer to him? Ha'atazeh Adoni, Eliyahu. Are you my master, Eliyahu? Who's Obadiah the slave to right now? Right, he's an Eved, he's a servant. So who's his master? Well, we thought Achav, but now he's referring to Eliyahu as my master. And what does Eliyahu say in the very next pasuk? Vayomer lo, ani, it's me. Lechemor, go say to, does he say Achav's name? La'adonecha, go say to your master. So there are a lot of masters going on here. We know that Obadiah, he's an Eved. He's an Eved of Hashem. He refers to Eliyahu as his master, and Eliyahu refers to Achav as Obadiah's master. So who's Obadiah's master? What are the Pesukim trying to communicate? Why is that word Adonecha used in different contexts, referring to different people? Who's the master?
Both.
Well, I was going to say, if you ever need to know an answer in Judaism, say it's a machlokas, right? It's both. It's the whole point. Who's Obadiah? If I asked you now to just define Obadiah, who's Obadiah's identity? Well, you would tell me it's both. On the one hand, we are told that his name is Eved Hashem. We're told that he's a Yirei Hashem. He refers to Eliyahu as Adonecha, my master. That's on one side. On the other side, who's his master right now? His master is Achav. And that's why Eliyahu gives him that like shtuch and says, go say to your master, Achav. So what's Obadiah's identity?
He's a confused Jew. Right?
He's a confused Jew. He is. Obadiah lacks a clear identity. Does he belong to Hashem in Eliyahu? Or does he belong to Achav? And so in a very real way, Obadiah personifies the challenges that are facing the entire nation. And it foreshadows the challenges that are going to be expressed about the entire nation. That which Obadiah struggles with is exactly the same struggle of the people. And so whenever you have a story as dramatic as the story of Eliyahu at Har HaKarmel, and there are lots of little subplots, sometimes you can get confused of those subplots. Is it about the miracles? Is it about Eliyahu? About Achav? No. The Navi sets the stage and tells us, you want to know what the story is centrally about? It's a story of identity. And the way I'm going to tell you that is by introducing you to a Jew that lacks a clear identity. His name is Obadiahu. On the one hand, he feels allegiances to the Nevi'i Baal, to Achav. On the other hand, he feels allegiances to Hashem. He's torn. He's a confused Jew. It's the story of the Jewish nation, right? And that sets the stage for that dramatic Eliyahu turning to the people and saying, Ad matay atem poschim. That's the key line here. When are you going to formulate a clear identity? That's point number one. Okay? Point number two is, does our ending have a climactic ending or an anticlimactic ending? What say you? When we ended the parrot, did you end on a high or did you end on a... So for me, it's very anticlimactic. Here you have this dramatic miracles and fire coming down from the heavens and consuming water and animals. And I mean, you can't just read these psukim. You have to digest these psukim. Because you really have to envision, like us sitting here right now, and you got Goldberg on one side of the bima and Moskowitz on the other side of the bima, and we're like, we're not letting you out of shul this morning until God answers one of us. And all of a sudden, through the sunroof, lightning comes down, fire, and of course it consumes Moskowitz's, korban. Joke, right? See, you have to, like, that sounds so ludicrous. But that's that's what happens here. It's a miracle on par with the 10 plagues in Egypt, with Kriyas Yamsuf. I mean, this is one of the biggies in Tanakh. This is dramatic. And what happens right afterwards? So you have Eliyahu telling Achav to go up on the mountain and eat and drink and watch, because this little cloud is going to come and it's going to create a lot of rain. It just seems to me incredibly anticlimactic. Even if you want to tell me that there was rain, there just seems, as you pointed out, there just seems like a lot of noise, a lot of unnecessary conversation taking place. Go, okay, I'll go. Now you go. Higher, like everyone's Ale. The word Ale appears like 8 times there. Go up. Everyone's going up. So what exactly is the story with the end of the narrative? So the answer is, this was a suggestion I read from Rabbi Alex Israel. The answer is in Pasuk 42. Okay? Again, the whole purpose of the last part of our chapter is obviously to put a little bit of a bookend on the story of the drought. And now rain is going to come, okay? And it's going to end the drought. And Ahav, don't forget, the whole purpose of the drought was to get Ahav to realize that Hashem is really in charge. So he's basically telling him, Ahav, you go up to the viewing center, and you're going to watch as God creates this miracle called rain. But notice what Eliyahu does. Vayale Ahav lechov lishtot. Eating and drinking is, when miracles are taking place, symbolizes what? Almost like a passivity. Like you just sit back, relax, enjoy your bonbons, while I take care of business right now. Okay? So he's eating and drinking. Ve'eliyahu ala el rosha karmel, va'ighar arza. He prostrates himself down. Okay? What does va'ighar mean? So again, Radak says, she'it na'pel lifnei Hashem ala matar, l'maher, letito ba'od achav sham. That Eliyahu is basically davening to Hashem like, all right, God, it's getting late. Ahav isn't going to stay here all day. If you want to, right, the icing on the cake, the ultimate wow factor is if the rain comes. But if Ahav leaves before the rain comes, miss the whole purpose, right, God, it's almost time, running, right? Eliyahu is the first Yaki, right? He's in God. We're running out of time here, okay? Where else? I don't expect you to know this, but where else in Tanakh is that word Vayikar used? One other place. No. It's a story of Malachim Bet with Eliyahu's student, Elisha. And it's with that Isha HaShunamit. Right? It's another very famous story. The other famous story of resuscitation, where the child dies. Remember, Elisha is welcomed in. He's given hospitality. A barren woman, he says, how can I ever repay you? She says, I don't have a child. He davens that she should have a child. Elisha goes into the field. The servant comes and runs and says the child is having headaches. They come back. He dies, right? A brain aneurysm. Elisha prostrates himself on the child and resuscitates him, Vayighar. And that's interesting. So we're connecting these two stories. We're connecting the story of Eliyahu at Har Carmel, the story of rain, to the story of Tchiyat HaMetim, of reviving the dead. What's the significance about that? So I want to share with you a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara tells the following. This is by the story of, I think, Eliyahu with the resuscitation. But by Rachamin, L'meisav Lei, Akle de Tchiyas HaMesa. So Eliyahu asked for the ability to do Tchiyas HaMesim, to resuscitate, to revive the dead. Amri Lei, but he was told by the heavenly forces, Shlosh Maftechos Lo Nimsiru L'Shaliach. There are 3 keys that God holds to himself. What are they? Shel Chaya, key to childbirth, right? Even with IVF and all this stuff, God controls childbirth. Shel Gishamim, rain, and Shel Tchiyat HaMetim, and reviving the dead. Says the heavens, Shtayim Biyad Talmud Ve'echad Biyad Harab. I already gave you 2 of them, right? 2 I've given to the student, and 1 God has kept for himself. So what are the 2 that he's given to the students? So the key of childbirth, rain, and resuscitation. You already have the key to rain, and now you want the key of Tchiyas HaMesim also. Notice Hashem, don't forget, who's the one who initiated the drought? Eliyahu. So Hashem says, I already gave you 1 of them, And now you want me to give you the second one also? No dice. He says, I'll make you a trade. I'll give you the key to Tchiyas HaMesim, but I want back the key to rain. Why? What's this? Such a strange conversation. Why does Hashem hold these three keys? Why won't he give Eliyahu more than one of them? He wants one back. What's the message of the Gemara? The message is that there's a limit to human capability and human power. That there are certain things that Hashem planted in the world as an everlasting reminder that no matter how far human beings progress with science and technology and capabilities, there are certain things that we will just never be able to control. When there was a hurricane barreling down on Florida in, what was it, August, wasn't a darn thing you and I could do about it other than put up our shutters and daven and hope and wait, right? 2017, can't figure out a way to shift some winds? The answer is no, right? There are certain keys that God implanted into nature that will serve as an everlasting reminder that he is in charge, okay? Now, against that backdrop, so two of those three stories are already here. The story of Elisha, Tchiyas HaMesim, and now we have the story of rain. Vayighar, Eliyahu prostrates himself down. Why is rain the culmination of the story? It is anticlimactic when you talk about fire coming down from heaven. But then rain somehow is the end of the story. Why is rain the end of the story? Because rain is symbolic of God's strength. Don't forget, how did this all start? This all started because Ahab deviated from Hashem. And Eliyahu says, I need to do something dramatic and drastic to make him realize that he's not in charge, but that Hashem is in charge. And so what's the greatest way to do this? Ahab, I want you to go and sit there. And I'm going to dive into Hashem, and you know what he's going to do? He is going to end this drought. You can't. All your idols, they've done nothing right now. I'm going to dive into Hashem, and by him ending the drought, it's going to show once and for all that he is in charge. Very similar. Many, many similarities between this story and the story of the Esar Makos in Egypt. Right? A similar purpose, which is to remind an evil, wicked king that they're not in charge. It's not their strength and their might that ultimately drives the world, but that it's Hashem who's in charge. We'll see next week many more similarities, because the story of Moshe in the desert, in the story at the Sneh, at the burning bush, and the story of Eliyahu when he meets Hashem in the cave also has many, many similarities. But again, we keep on getting drawn back to the story of Mitzrayim. So these end psukim are not anticlimactic. They actually serve as the ultimate culmination of the story, because it is the icing on the cake. It's the nail in the coffin telling Ahav, you thought that was good, I'm going to do one better, which is I'm going to cause rain, something that you've been unable to do for a very long time. Okay, so the end of the parak is not anticlimactic, it is very climactic, because it showcases, it drives home the entire point to Ahav, that God is in charge. Here's one more beautiful point, and with this I want to end, with really a message, I think, that's profound, not just for understanding the text in our lives, but I think is very applicable to the day's celebration, as you hear the high schools preparing in the background for their chagiga of Yom HaTzmaut. Let's start chapter 19 for a second. Okay? And I purposefully gave you that whole page, because I want to show you a magnificent idea I saw. Chapter 19 starts off, it's a continuation of our story. Vayager Ahav li'Izebel is kol asher asa Eliyahu. Ahav tells Izebel. Izebel is the real wicked one here, because she's the one who's been murdering all of the prophets. So he tells her everything Eliyahu did. Veis kol asher harag es kol nevim becharev, and how he's killed off all of her prophets, really. But Yishlach Izebel Malach El Eliyahu. Izebel sends a messenger to Eliyahu, Lemor, Ko Yasun Elohim, Viko Yosifun, Ki Kaes Machar Asim Es Nafshecha Kenefesh Achad Mehem. Remember what you just did to all my prophets? Well, tomorrow, I'm going to do that tenfold to you. What's interesting about that? What's weird about that? You envision, Achav comes home. He reports to Yezebel. What do you get the sense? She's burning with anger. She's seething with anger right now. Eliyahu has challenged her husband. He's killed off her prophets. He's challenged her. She's burning with anger. And what does she say? Oh, I'll get back to you tomorrow. I'll get around to dealing with you tomorrow. What's the nature of anger? Does it increase over time or dissipate over time? Dissipates over time, right? When we talk about you kill someone, we don't say you killed someone. There's a term for it. In a fit of rage. It means that a person gets angry and they do illogical, nonsensical things. So you imagine Achav coming to Yezebel and saying, look what Eliyahu did. And you imagine the next pasuk should say that Yezebel got her army together, chased after Eliyahu, had him killed on the spot, cut off his head, paraded him around town to say, I'm really in charge. And that's not what she does. I'm going to sleep on it, basically. I'll get to you tomorrow. It's so strange when you think about it. Listen to the following suggestion I saw. Absolutely gorgeous. Why does she wait until tomorrow? Because who else is emotional on the day of the throwdown? The Jewish people. Don't forget, the Jewish people start off with a schizophrenic identity. Do we belong to Hashem? Do we belong to the Nevi'ei Baal? Eliyahu produces these incredible miracles. How does it culminate for the Jewish people? Hashem, Hu Elohim, right? Picture yourself in Ne'ilah, Lahavdil. You're screaming, God, you're my God, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it, I belong to you. They're on fire. They're like a Shana Aleph kid coming back from the year in Israel. They are like burning with desire to get close to Hashem. You think they're going to tolerate Yezebel doing what she wants to do? No, if word gets out that Yezebel is hunting down Eliyahu, Eliyahu, by the way, just created one of the greatest miracles ever known to mankind. So what are they going to do? They're going to defend Eliyahu. She knows the odds are stacked against her. So what does she do? She says, let me give it till tomorrow. What does she gain by waiting until tomorrow? Are the people going to be as fiery about God? Right? I laugh every time. You finish, Hashem, Elohim, God, right? And then, like, you blow the shofar on Yom Kippur night, in like 15 seconds, Kaddish, right? 4 seconds ago, you were screaming at the top of your lungs. Now you can't wait to get to, the baseball playoffs. The answer is that our burning desire to get close to Hashem also dissipates over time. And so Yezebel says, you know what? If I'm up against a Jewish people that's totally committed to God, all I'm going to do is wait till tomorrow. And by tomorrow, they'll have forgotten all about it. They won't be so quick to defend Eliyahu. Their amazement and wonderment at the miracles that Eliyahu created the day before, that'll all have washed away. It's a tremendous insight into human nature. That we become very passionate about things. We become very fiery about things. We become very grateful about things. And over time, what happens? It withers away. And so Yezebel says, I'm going to wait until tomorrow, because by tomorrow, all of that excitement that the Jewish people felt about Hashem Hu Elohim, they won't be feeling that tomorrow. Right? You want to know how to cool down a Shana Aleph kid? You give him a couple of months. Right? Because over time, that fire dissipates. Okay? And that is the message I want to leave you with this chapter, and a message I think is very important for Yom HaAtzmaut. We are now 69 years into the founding of the State of Israel, and for many people, and I would include ourselves, all of whom consider ourselves ardent Zionists, the miracle, the excitement, it dissipates over time. That feeling of gratitude and excitement and passion. I wasn't alive in 1967, many of you were, but I read a lot of books. Again, you're invited tonight, Begin versus Ben-Gurion. So you read about that sense of euphoria that enveloped the Jewish people in the aftermath of the 1967 miracle, right? And nowadays, we had an event here last night, Yom HaZikaron, Yom HaAtzmaut, barely filled the sanctuary, didn't even fill the sanctuary, right? If we had done a Chagiga last night, you know how many people would have come? 50 people, 60 people, and I know because we've done it before, right? So we, the Zionists of America, who love Israel, right? You know what? Game of Thrones is on Monday. It's not so convenient for me to leave the house to get a babysitter. I just got a babysitter to go out with my friends the other night. It's not worth the money. You know what? I'm not going to shul. Not going to shul? I told someone last night, if you stopped a Jewish family in Russia at the beginning of the 20th century, the end of the 19th century, Pale the settlement, extreme poverty, and you said there's going to be a gathering in the synagogue tonight because we're going to celebrate that in 50 years there's going to be something called a state of Israel, a homeland with an army and security. You know what would happen in that shul? You wouldn't have, the city would have closed down. Everyone would have come. And they would be singing and dancing, and you couldn't have controlled the excitement. And here we are 69 years later, and we can barely fill a sanctuary of one of the largest modern Orthodox shuls in the country in celebration and in commemoration of those who served in giving over their lives of Israel. That's Izevel's tactic. Izevel's tactic is saying, if I just wait enough over time, you get used to the miracles. It becomes like second nature to you. You stop being excited about it. Our job, and really, I don't mean to comment on anyone's age, but it's our job and really my job as I transition to that next generation. I think about this all the time. What's Yom HaAtzmaut going to be in 20 years, in 30 years? What's Yom HaShoah going to be in 20 years, in 30 years? It's our job to make sure that we are giving over that excitement, that not just institutional knowledge, because knowledge you can read in books, but the emotion of what it means to have a homeland, what it was like before we had a homeland, that we are living in an age of miracles. And we have to constantly be talking about that, putting our money where our mouth is, with visiting Israel and supporting Israel and caring about Israel and making sure that our children, our grandchildren, don't just read a book about, you know, that Danny Gordas wrote about the concise history of the Jewish people, which is important, but that they know the stories and that you describe for them what it was like in 67 and what it was like in 91 when Scud missiles were raining down and what it was like, the stories that your parents told you about 48 and the founding of the State of Israel, right? These are stories we need to communicate to ensure that Izevel's tactic of just waiting and allowing time to mitigate our excitement and our sense of the miracle never happens. That we should always feel that we are living in a time of miracles. We should always feel that sense of gratitude and appreciation that we are really living in a generation, an unprecedented generation of open and apparent miracles of Hashem. Everyone have a Chag Sameach.